You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I'm your host, JD, along with Chris Triplett and Chris McFeely. This week, it is Fanboy Versus Bad Advice. So, we'll get to that later. Kilby this week. He's out of town, but we will press on because we have the two Chrises. So
JD and the double C.
That's right. You got it.
I was hoping Brian would be on because I want to hear about his Spider-Man Jack in the Box.
Spider-Man Jack in the Box. I saw something.
Did you see that?
I saw something about it, but I have no idea what it is.
I haven't watched the video yet.
Watch the video. It's awesome.
YouTube, folks.
Nice.
What's the YouTube? Is it TF Radio or TF Radio Network? What is it?
I think it's TF Radio. I think there's even a contest going on over there through RFC. So there's links on the website at tfradio.net. So we'll go with that for now. And Brian is now screaming at this recording. So I don't think there's really much news. So we'll skip over that. It's post Comic Con people.
There's been some. The Baltimore, I think, was it the Baltimore Comic Con or something was out. But they basically seem to have just talked about books that we already knew about. There were some panels on Ultimate Thor, and there's some rumbling apparently that Fantastic Four is going to air quotes end.
Ooh,
end.
What? Well, four's in, then it's gonna be three. Yeah, they're doing the big three storyline.
I kind of roll my eyes at the notion because really, you know, no, it's some kind of stunt. But yeah, you know, I mean, Thor did end for a couple of years there. And I would be unhappy if I did that with Fantastic Four, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what have the numbers been like on it lately? I would assume compared to the other titles, not as well.
I think it's worse or better than Fantastic Four ever usually is.
Yeah.
Middle of the range book. Always is.
I'm going to grain of salt that one, but like I say.
Well, Tom, somebody tweeted me about it last night. It was a customer. Where is that link? Let me just pull her up here. It's about the only thing we have that you could classify as news. We don't have a precise issue or reasoning, but when asked if the Fantastic Four title would even exist this time next year, given the three arc and the return of Doom to the series, Redford simply said, no, there will not. I'll put that out there. No, there will not. He refused to elaborate further. It is interesting to note that 1 year from now would put the series around issue 593, just a few issues shy of 600. Would Marvel stop the series at that landmark just to relaunch and revert back? Will issue 600 be the final issue before some sort of franchise shift? This is from IGN, by the way. But, three kicks off next month, and looking forward to it. But we have to get this month's out of the way first, which we'll talk about later.
I mean, if you got to kill it, you have to kill it at some point.
No, you don't.
I mean, that's one of the books you don't kill. You don't kill that book.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, if that's what you put your mind to, if Joe Quesada has said that it's going to end, it has to end at some point.
Joe Quesada said Spider-Girl was going to end, and a new issue of that came out this week, so there you go.
Yeah.
That was the last issue, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, for now.
Yeah.
God. Anyway. The joys. So, we'll just do some reviews this week, then.
Because that's what we do.
So, Triplett, pick some hot ones for us.
Hot ones. How about Action Comics number 892, the new issue starring Lex Luthor?
Ooh.
Did any of you guys read it? Are any of you guys
I give it a leaf because I surprisingly enjoy. Well, basically, I give the first part of this Cornell Luther thing a leaf. Was really impressed by it. Give the second one a leaf because Mr. Mind, awesome.
Yeah.
And give this one a leaf because it had been going so well, but I have decided now I'm not going to leaf any more issues because I'm going to pick the trade up because it's just that bloody good. So I can't really discuss it with you, but I can definitely say it's good enough that I'm going to pick the trade up. So,
well, it's still pretty good. I mean, it's not really got to, I guess, anything going yet. I mean, it seems like it's just kind of building to something now. Because, like, the first issue was Luther got kidnapped. And that led into the whole, Mr. Mind, is that his name?
Yeah.
And that led into that whole issue. And then this issue, he's now actually kind of...
No, Mr. Mind.
I'm sorry. I'm not big on old DC stuff. I'm sorry.
That's Captain Marvel.
I'm not big on that. Sorry.
Mr. Mind was the villain of 52.
I know.
But, Mr. Mind is my Twitter avatar.
I know. But this issue,
I like Mr. Mind.
I can tell. This issue, he's getting in the direction of going after, the power from Blackest Night, that power that he wants more of, and it's kind of like going in a direction. And I would like to say one thing: the art in this book's gorgeous. Mm. I love the art for Action Comics right now. And it's
who is the artist on that?
Let me look at it real quick. Something Woods. Something Woods. Let's see.
Is Pete Woods?
Oh, wait, no. Pete, let's see. Pete Woods with, is it pronounced Pierre? Perez?
Don't know. Is that the anchor? Or?
No, it says Paul Cornell writer, Pete Woods with Pierre Perez. I don't know. I don't know who it is, but it's nice. It's got a cool style to it.
Pete Woods, I think, is the penciler.
It's got a cool style to it, and I really like the look of it. And this issue's got Deathstroke in it, so what's not to like about that?
He's in everything. That's like,
he has been around a lot lately, hasn't he?
That is not even... going back... I know something we need to go back on, but we'll wait till Triplets over, and then we'll go back to that. Anyway.
But do you get to see him fight Lex Luthor in his green and purple suit very often?
Awesome!
And there's a little comment in it in which Luther says something to the effect, if I didn't have the force field on my head, he would have knocked my head off with that kick. So that's pretty awesome.
Wow.
But, I mean, it's just more of the same. It's a good book. And not to spoil the ending. I don't want to spoil the ending because you haven't read it yet, and you said you're going to pick up the trades. So
I leafed this a little.
So,
possible,
little... villain or a nuisance for Luther is going to show up the next issue, and it's pretty awesome, and it's a good book.
Wouldn't a villain for Luther be a hero?
Well, he's not really.
The aim seems to be that they're putting him through the gauntlet of, because I've just remembered how it ended. So they're putting him through the gauntlet of villains. We had Mr. Mind, Captain Marvel's archenemy. This issue, I'll just say it, it's a spoiler, is Gorilla Grodd, archenemy of the Flash. And of course, we know in a couple of issues, it might even be next issue, start the issue after that, Death from the Sound of the Endless is appearing, which is basically the ultimate. To call it a villain is not right at all, because death doesn't represent death, represents death as an inevitability. But you know what I mean? It's like the ultimate thing that Luthor will fight against. You know, it's putting him through the gauntlet of villainy and things, stuff like that. That's
also, he can end up fighting Hector Hammond for the
Orange
Light. That would be...
Yeah. But another extra thing is you get to see the... I guess this is a preview of Superboy number 1 as a backup in it. I don't know if this is just a backup teasing Superboy, or if it's actually a like a preview of Superboy number 1. But it's kind of cool. You get to see what's going to go on with that book.
Is it a second feature? It's a $4 book, isn't it?
That's a good question. I think it was.
Well, it probably means like a feature then, rather than a preview.
Well, it says second feature, Superboy. But the way that the story reads is that it actually says, to be continued or something in Superboy number one.
Well, so the Atom was supposed to be becoming the second feature in this, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
Maybe that was Adventure Comics.
Is that going to be regular? Is the Atom supposed to start being in Action Comics as a backup?
Hang on, let me just get my thoughts together. Oh no, that's actually that's Adventure Comics. I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but with this, I don't think there's been a backup since they've done the whole Lex Luthor thing. I think this is the first issue that actually had a backup to it. So it kind of felt more like it was like here's just kind of extended preview of what Superboy number one is going to be like. And I don't know if this is going to be actual pages from that issue or if it just leads into the first issue. But it was kind of cool, you know, get to see Superboy in action and see what they're doing with that. But all around, good book. I mean, it's still a good book. I've not got to the point where I'm tired of it. Still loving that, you know, he's got a robot Lois Lane going everywhere with him on his adventures. It's just weird. But, yeah, you guys should be reading it. Somebody else should read it besides me so we can talk about it. So.
Well, I like Paul Cornell and it had Mr. Mind in it, which was basically enough to convince me to give the trade a go when it comes out.
But let's see. Other than that, you guys read Avengers, so we'll leave that for last.
Yeah.
I'll leave Fantastic Four to you since you gush over it. I can talk some Wonder Woman 602.
Yes.
Anybody read that?
No.
Well, something actually happens. There's some actual action going on. Yeah. Like, you know, did any of you guys read, like, the previous issue where she was on the plane and it was she was following the military guys and she can't fly, but she can, like, you know, hit you right on the outside of a plane?
Yeah, we talked about that, about how great that was.
Oh, I don't think I was here, was I?
No, I don't think so, but yeah.
Yeah, but so the plane finally lands, and she proceeds to beat the bloody hell out of some guys, and turns out she finds some survivors of the Amazons. They're actually in Turkey is where they're located. There's like a temple or something there. They had some temples in different countries, and they were going there to pray, trying to get some help from these soldiers, I guess, that are hunting them down and killing them. And they see that that Wonder Woman showing up, and they basically view that as their prayers were answered. You know, they've got someone to actually help them. And so she's trying to get them out of the temple alive. She's, you know, angry as hell because all this is happening. She's trying to get answers. And, you know, you get a little bit more information about what's going on with this whole storyline, but it still seems like, I think we talked about where this is like an alternate reality, and when this is all over, that it might not even matter anyway. So you still kind of feel that all of this is almost for nothing. But you do get a really awesome fight sequence where it's like they're going to have to get everybody out that's inside the temple, but basically Diana has to, you know, create a distraction so they can escape. And you get to see, you know, Wonder Woman basically just beat the bloody hell out of a whole bunch of soldiers, which is pretty awesome. Pretty good book. I don't know what else is – I mean, I don't know where they're going with it. I mean, it kind of like seems like she's now going with these Amazons. I don't know where they're going, but she's trying to get them out of Turkey so that they don't die. But it still – I mean, it seems like it's kind of like, you know, going from like issue to issue. You know, like, you know, there's not like a clear plot. Like, we don't know what Straczynski's doing with Wonder Woman. We don't know that, okay, she's like trying to fix the world. Is she just trying to save the Amazons? Is she trying to figure out what happened to the way the world was before? You know, the Wonder Woman that we all know in the DC universe that we normally know. I don't even know if she knows what she's doing. She's just basically at this point just trying to help the Amazons. But it was a pretty good book. I liked it. I don't know if I'm going to keep getting it, though. I'm still thinking about it. I want to get it because it's Wonder Woman, and I want to get it because it's Straczynski. But there's not, like, a hook, you know, to keep me going. You know, I mean, like, it could be something where I could just wait for a trade. You know, because, like, if it's only 12 issues or something, if they only do it for, like, a year, it'd almost be better just wait and get the trade and just read the whole thing.
I think he got drunk one night and thought that the overarching story concept for the new Knight Rider series was a good idea, where you just have one episode after the other and nothing really happens and there's nothing really to keep you watching.
Well, there's stuff happening in this comic, but it's just that, I mean, there's nothing that says, oh, well, you know, this is different, you know? Like, you know, Straczynski comes on, he gives her a new costume, he basically kind of rewrites her history.
But well, it's like you say, though, it doesn't even sound like there's, like, a hook. It doesn't even sound like there's
it's different. It's the hook. Like, I can't even muster the enthusiasm to care, honestly.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at. It's like, why, based on the things that you've said about the book, and not just you, like other reviews I've heard as well, I don't understand why I would even want to read this story. If it's one thing if it's different and going somewhere, and if it's going to tell this interesting pocket universe story, and then, okay, it's going to be gone at the end, that's fine. But if it's boring, if it's not interesting, if there's no hook, and then it's going away, I definitely don't want to read it.
Right. But, you know, like I said, it's not a bad book. I think that, okay, what this is like, what, the second issue? Or did they start, this in 600, actually. It was like
That had the prequel in it, but this sort is like the a second short. True issue.
Yeah. So maybe third or fourth issue we'll actually see where it's going. I know that sometimes you kind of have to give like a book a chance to see where it's going. But I don't know, by the third or fourth issue, if we don't figure out what in the hell he's doing with this, it might be a book that we just need to kick to the curb.
I already have.
Yeah, I know.
I never even picked it. I left it lying there. I walked on by.
I'm speaking in general. I'm not just talking about like us. I'm talking about like everybody.
Yeah. You know? That's what I'm saying. I mean, if it turns out it's really cool, then I'll worry about getting the trade. But I mean, nothing I have heard even has slightly piqued my interest.
And I can talk about Superman Secret Origin, number 6.
Yes, I read that.
You read that? I did. I know JD didn't read it.
Nope. Big fucking godlike guy falls out of the sky, brings peace, hope, and love to the world.
That is literally the plot of this issue.
Yeah, kinda. It was good. I mean, I liked it, and I still love Gary Frank's art. Even though it's still, you know, Superman still was really creepy looking. You know, I mean, it's still hard to. I mean, he looks just like Christopher Reeve. It's just
it's that upper lip.
I mean, it's awesome because I mean he looks like Christopher Reeve, but then it's also just kind of, I don't know, just unsettling when you see it. But I love the kind of retro-ish looking design for Metallo. You know, the kind of, he looks like he's something from the 60s. That's awesome. But it's, you know, it's good. I mean, I don't know what I can say about it. I mean, because basically in a nutshell, you know, it's Superman's origin. Hey, you know, it basically, it pretty much ends like the first episode of Superman, the animated series. You know, one that came out
outside,
all back.
Lex Luthor's window delivers an old passive-aggressive threat. Luthor whops something through the window and everything turns out well.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I mean, it's good. I could see a regular book with Jeff Johns and Gary Frank doing it, like a regular Superman book that kind of like follows this.
Yeah, builds it back up again.
Yeah, but I don't really. I mean, I don't understand kind of why this series came out, because this is like what, like the third or fourth in something like the last 10 years.
I don't know. I think you could probably shrink that time frame down a bit. Yeah.
Maybe even less, but like I can remember like the one that Mark Waid did, and I can remember I guess you can count the Jeff Loeb story, the Superman for All Seasons as one. I mean, like how many more of these are they gonna do? I mean, what's the point really? I mean, is this supposed to be like the new Jeff Johns Superman universe, and then when Jeff Johns is done with, you know, with his master control over DC Comics, will the next one be like somebody else's version of Superman universe or something?
Well, I guess I think this is the first retelling since the last Universal reboot, courtesy of Infinite Crisis.
Really?
I think so. I think it's the first time they've redone it since then.
Yeah,
the
since
4 years.
Since Infinite Crisis, yeah, it was the first. It's the first one because like the one that Mark Waid did, I can't remember the name of it.
Birthright.
Birthright. Yeah, that was prior to it, and then Superman for All Seasons was several years ago. I can't remember exactly when it came out. But yeah, yeah. I mean, so I guess the point is to kind of tell you what changed, I guess, with Infinite Crisis, but it doesn't seem like much changed at all. Lois still kind
of
hates her dad. Lois
has a
crush on Superman.
A heck of a lot.
Yeah.
Superman is still a godlike douchebag that flies
the
around.
The earliest issues were the most interesting ones because they were the ones that went back and did the Luthor and Smallville stuff and showed how he killed his dad and everything.
Yeah, I like that. I thought that was
good stuff. And the first meeting with the Legion of Superheroes. And of course, this has been so badly delayed that that issue with the Legion came out back around whenever the Legion were engaged in a lot of time travel and were quite intrinsic to things that were happening crisis-wise. Because this has been a chronically delayed series. We would be remiss if we didn't mention that fact.
Yeah, I was thinking that like the it'd been a long time since issue 5 came out. I can't even remember when the last one came out. I was kind of surprised to see that
customer picked this up this week and was like, I was going to ask you about that. I thought I'd missed it.
Yeah. No.
But it's a good book. I'd recommend it. I'd say, you know, check it out. But, you know, you could probably just wait for the eventual, you know, trade paperback because it'd be kind of...
this is the final issue, so yeah.
So, like, I guess the trade's probably like coming, like, next week or something, isn't it? Or maybe I'm thinking of Marvel Comics, you know?
No, DC will probably do a hardback, and then the paperback won't be along until next Christmas or so.
But, yeah,
I'm exaggerating a little bit.
Yeah, but it's cool. If you're people that don't suck like JD, you'll like it, but...
I'm not the world's biggest Superman fan either, but I really did enjoy this miniseries. I enjoyed it more than a lot, I think, anybody else that I've ever talked to about it. I really did.
It's a fun comic. I mean, like you were saying, like the earlier issues are better because they just seem more entertaining. But this was just like that obligatory, you know, you just kind of have to finish it up. And Superman's got to kind of give you like a reason to hope for change or something better.
But I always think Jeff Jones does those moments very well.
Yeah. You know,
look, up in the sky. He really gets and respects like the almost mythic nature of Superman as a superhero, you know. He does things that are always able to make me appreciate the wonder that the character represents.
And that's it. That's pretty much all I got.
Yeah, this one, Superman's amazing.
The hate comes boiling over.
Anyway, that's great. So I want to backtrack for just a second and mention something that came out a few weeks ago that we did not get to talk about because you were not here, McFeely, which is Secret Six.
The Western issue.
Yeah. Did Grant Morrison, like, hold Gail Simone at gunpoint and make her write this, or what was that?
I don't know. It was hardly Morrison-y in its mentalness. It was just, it was almost like it was a random... See, I mean, they all pretty much did seem to die at the end there, so I don't think it's going to continue into the next issue. And I don't really think that I don't know what we can expect. I don't think we're looking at any kind of time travel or any kind of like continuing just like each issue is a different time zone or era thing. I think it might have just been a funny one-off issue. Well, not funny, because it was bleak as all hell.
Yeah, it was really dark. So, yeah, funny is not the word I would use.
Okay, I haven't read the issue, but did it get star Jonah Hex?
No.
No.
Because but he kind of has to be in all Western
DC
stories.
Comics set in the Old West.
Yeah.
He kind of has to be in all of them, though, don't he? I mean, any Western story for DC doesn't have to have Jonah Hex in it.
Yeah, apparently not. But Deathstroke was in it, which was why it reminded me of it. So I was like, he's everywhere. He's in Titans, he's in Secret Six, he's in everything. But no, I mean, and I kind of felt weird about that issue because I liked it. Like, just the contained, like, story and what happened, I really liked it. It just kind of felt left field, and I wasn't really sure.
Yeah, like, I miss whenever DC used to have a little preview of what to expect in the next issue in the bottom left-hand corner of the DC Nation page.
Yeah.
I wish we could get that back again so we could get some notion of what's about to happen.
Yeah, like,
I mean, there's that that cover in the newest preview for the next issue. Not that it's a couple of issues of Secret Six down the line, but it's Bane riding a dinosaur. So, wow. While that is awesome by definition,
yeah.
Supposed to be looking at some sort of story that's going to entail time travel and if it may be connected to this or not, but I don't, right now, I don't expect anything else to come from it. It just was a good, solid, standalone issue.
Okay.
What was that line? You think just because I'm a whore, I don't have standards? Of course you do. Went and made me take a bath.
Yes. Oh. There were some good lines in that.
There's always some good lines in Secret Six.
Go ahead, McFeely. I'll let you go next.
Okay, what do we got? I'm going to kick off with Thor this week, because this is a great issue of Thor. You know, I was talking about the previous issues before. This just essentially seems to be Kieran Gillen writing a fill-in story of sorts while Matt Fraction hangs around waiting to pull his thumb out and actually start his run on the book. But it picks up from some threads that that Gillen had put in place, and as I believe I summed it up before, essentially, the ancient Asgardian eaters of souls, known as the Disir, have been put in Mephisto's service by Loki as part of an extended plan to get Mephisto to turn over a small portion of his hell to Hela so she can allow the dead Asgardians to rest in peace. There. Or not necessarily in peace, but you know, she has a realm in which to keep the Asgardian dead, which she doesn't, since that was destroyed along with everything else. So, you know, it's all pretty much in massive open conflict with what's going on over in Avengers Prime, but I don't care because this is better. And unfortunately, Mephisto being Mephisto has said, yeah, I'm in charge of you ladies now, and I say it's okay for you to go into that piece of hell and eat those dead souls. So it's all sort of fallen apart, and Hela's had to call upon Thor and the Asgardians to come to hell and help her. And it's allowing Tyr, or Tyr, we had this discussion before, the Asgardian god of war, to get some more focus, because he was one of the central B-list characters that played a part in Thor's siege tie-in. And I like this guy, too.
I want to say it's Tyr, but...
Well, he's defending Hela, who is animating an army of the undead with her soul to fend off the Disir, while Thor searches the vast wastes of hell for the sword which can control the Disir, which is in Mephisto's possession. And that's basically the plot of the issue. But it's full of, like, brilliant ancient Asgardian burns.
Burns as in, like...
Yeah, like, burn! Like... The one that's just
I didn't know if you meant like as they were actually set ablaze and it's third degree burns or it's
there's
like
plenty of that too. But you know, towards the end of the issue, the Disir penetrate Hela's fortress and they're faced with Tyr, you know, he's lost one of his hands, he's there, sword in one remaining hand, and he says, "Come on, Slattens, let us end this. End me." And they all just rush right past him and they turn back in one of themselves. "But why would we do that, Tyr Battleshy? You're no god of war. In fact, if I took but a step towards you, you would be hailed as the god of field and farmers because of how admirably well you'll have soiled the ground."
Oh, no, he didn't. Wow. Oh, snap.
F. Stuff,
you know. And did they show him lose his hand in the issue, or was that the previous?
I think it was in a previous issue. I can't remember if it was in a previous issue or if it was a trait of his that he already had. I've forgotten.
Are you familiar with that character's mythology? Or
I'm not even sure if he's a real figure of mythology.
Oh, he is. Oh, no, no. He's the real. He's the real deal. He's real Norse. No, he lost that ages ago to Fenrir, to Fenris. So, yeah. That's part of the. That's the actual dude.
I couldn't remember. Yeah. And another one that really got a laugh out of me was that Thor is essentially Thor's just trekking across the plains of Hel, and there's this voice that narrates his journey in like crazy epic prose. As he smashes his way through the things that try and pose riddles to him and stuff like that. And it pans out to show that it's this weird little fishbowl-headed demon that sits beside Mephisto and shows him the images of Thor's travels in his big fishbowly head and actually provides the narration.
Nice.
Mephisto's just with his head in his hand and he says, "I think I preferred it when couplets were in fashion. At least then our pretensions had a little bit of a beat."
All right.
So there's some really like strong and snappy dialogue and some pretty awesome action to this as well, because whenever the Disir penetrate the fortress and Tyr faces off with them, he uses a trick that Hela was just talking about, bringing her soul forth to animate the army to hold the Disir off, and Tyr, like having not taken the burn very well, pulls the armored like stump off of his arm, the armored gauntlet that protects his arm, and strains hard and summons forth his soul into this flaming red axe blade that's on the end of his arm and starts slashing into them.
Whoa.
And it's pretty awesome.
So Why am I not reading this?
Why not? Because you would be forgiven for believing it was a strange little filler. Because it is essentially what it is. But Kieran Gillen, I've always enjoyed Kieran Gillen, but he has proven that he has a really good handle. See, Straczynski's Thor was great, but it was great in a very different way. It was great in the very traditional Straczynski way of taking an icon and bringing them down to our level. It told some great stories, and it had plenty of great, like, awesome moments, even, you know, for every glowing red energy axe, you had Thor smashing Iron Man's armor in. You know, you had some really great stuff. But this is great in the Simonson high myth and adventure sort of way. And it's really, really worth reading. And I've said it before as well, but the art is by Richard Elson, who American fans probably won't really know, but British fans of things may be familiar with. If they ever read the British Sonic the Hedgehog comic, Sonic the Comic, he was that comic's premier artist and one of my earliest favorite artists and artistic influences. So I think it's great to see him on this book as well.
I want to read Thor, but I was kind of waiting, you know, because you kept saying that.
I did say wait for Fraction's run because Fraction has, you know, now he's had two very strong, albeit a comparatively brief second one between the two, runs behind him. He's really going to have to make sure he knocks it out of the park. He's going to have to make sure he keeps up the quality that he put out with those Thor one-shots from a couple of years back. Because Gillen, to go off on a slight tangent, I love me some Thor, but Marvel are slinging a ridiculous amount of Thor at the wall over the next couple of months. If you've
like
seen the
mini series and one shots and a lot of stuff
ridiculous.
In
they've already launched a second ongoing series, Thor Mighty Avenger.
There's a second ongoing series? How did I miss that?
It's by Roger Langridge, who did the Fin Fang Four strips, and he does the Muppet Show over at Boom Studios. And he's great, but I can't figure out what the point of it is, because it's not continuity. It's just some sort of retelling of the early days of Thor, but it's not in continuity. It's not ultimate. It's not a what if.
It so is just it Untold sort of Tales is. Of Thor?
No, what it's not even that.
What is he like? Did he get jealous of Demetrius and decide he wanted to, like,
I don't know.
It's
just
stories?
There, and I don't get why it exists. Hmm. And then launching. We're about to go into September. Launching this month, we have Thor First Thunder, which retails his early days. For Asgard. Don't even know what it's about offhand. Launching in October, we've got a Loki miniseries and the Ultimate Thor miniseries. And I've already forgotten what it is for November, but there's another... No, there's a Warriors 3 miniseries coming up as well. Astonishing Thor is going to kick off in November. There's an Iron Man Thor crossover miniseries as well. And it's like, guys, fucking seriously, wait and see if the rest of the world cares about the Thor movie before you start throwing all this out. It's really, there's something really presumptuous about the amount of Thor they're putting out ahead of the rest of the, ahead of the real world actually paying any attention to the Thor movie. And it's far, far, far too much Thor. It's more Thor. There's more Thor books than Deadpool books.
I was about to say, it's like Deadpool all of a sudden.
And it's not going to go well. Though I am going to check out, obviously I'm going to check out Ultimate Thor. And I'm probably going to get the Loki mini. And but I don't think I'm going to get any of the others because it's just too much damn Thor.
It's probably $4 an issue too. And
some of them are, sir. Yeah.
Gosh. It's expensive.
I mean, right now there's one Thor book that's head and shoulders above the notion of anything else, and it is the Me and Thor. It's a great read with comedy worked into the most darkest of subject matter, and it's even a neat subplot in there with Kelda blaming Balder for Bill's death, and she's got some bad stuff brewing there as well. So there's loads going on to enjoy in the Me and Thor book, and if you're not, seriously, yeah, give the trade a try. I think there's only one more issue of this storyline, so one more maybe before Fraction starts off. So presumably there'll be some kind of trade collection in some form or fashion of this story out sometime soon, and I would definitely recommend giving it a look.
Cool.
Nice.
What else we got then? Ultimate Mystery continues to be fairly entertaining. Not a heck of a lot to say about that one. It's a very babbly Bendis issue. It's pretty. There's a lot of reading in there as Spider-Woman goes to an interview with Roxxon to sneak inside the organization and find out what the hell's been going on in the series. Mind you, given that the third miniseries is called Ultimate Doom, I don't know if the identity of the villain is really that much of an ultimate mystery.
I don't get it.
And the last stand of the last ride of the Howling Commandos three-part story wrapped up in Secret Warriors this week as well. And Secret Warriors is a book that I do enjoy, but it's definitely like number three on my Hickman hit list after Fantastic Four and S.H.I.E.L.D. Because the coloring is always so brown. And I sometimes find I do have trouble remembering what's happened from issue to issue because so little actually does seem to happen in it, and it's supposed to end in less than 10 issues because it's got a built-in predetermined end. And I'm a little puzzled by it as a book because the whole shocking twist ending of the very first issue was that S.H.I.E.L.D. was supposed to have been some sort of outgrowth of the Hydra organization from long ago, and nothing has really been done with that. And the idea is being, as far as I can see, pretty loudly refuted over in S.H.I.E.L.D. So I really just don't know about Secret Warriors. I'm going to see it through. There's still plenty of moments that enjoy me in this last ride of the Howling Commandos story, which has been, well, it's fairly self-explanatory as a title, has been some of the strongest stuff that I thought I've enjoyed out of the book of late. But I mean, the Secret Warriors title, the book's not about, it's Nick Fury. It is, you know, Nick Fury. It is a book about Nick Fury. The Secret Warriors haven't been in it for three or four issues. And I still couldn't even name all those characters. I don't think anybody could because nobody cares. But there you go. But for much more high quality Hickman, we have Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
And this is the second
part of a two-part story. Well, notionally a two-part story in which Reed's father, Nathaniel Time Traveler, Nathaniel Richards, recruits college-age Reed, Ben, and Doom to aid him in a battle against the sole surviving parallel version of himself. All the different infinite parallel versions of Nathaniel Richards from across the multiverse have been hunting each other down and killing each other. And now there are only these two left. So Nathaniel gets Reed and Ben and Victor to help him fight them. And the implications, I mean, even outside of the story itself, the implications of that are crazy. I don't even know how that is supposed to reconcile with Nathaniel's pre-existing story from back in the 90s.
Is Nathaniel being played by Jet Li?
It's a little bit like that, because that does happen whenever they kill them. They take their knowledge. And it's like, no, there's one point here where the evil Nathaniel unleashes the Anachronauts, who are an army of creatures taken from throughout time, which he claims he took from another one of us, but the Anachronauts were servants of Kang. And Kang's real name is Nathaniel Richards, but it was always just sort of presumed that he was a descendant of the real Nathaniel, so I don't know if Hickman's just deliberately messing with everybody in this or not.
Well, it was Immortus that's making him do this, right? I mean, did I...
Yeah, but Immortus is also a descendant of him or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But, yeah, I mean, the first half of the book is pretty much an extended fight, and then Doom wins it.
Yeah.
In the most awesome, styly imaginable.
That was pretty cool. I like that.
I've always said that whenever a new writer comes on to Fantastic Four, they essentially are just building towards when they get to do their Doom story. Now, Mark Miller jumped headfirst into Doom after only one story arc, as I recall. But Hickman has been on it for a while now, and he hasn't done anything with Doom. So this is really his first toying with Doom, and it is so good. For all that they even do, you know, he bludgeons the other Nathaniel to death, you know, and he just turns and says, "Now we can leave this place. But I want you to remember, Richards. Remember what happened here. Remember who saved you. Remember who set you free. Remember Doom."
I like to think when he's saying that too that he has like a snotty young kid accent because they were
yes,
like college.
More like, you know? I was doing there. I want you to remember, Richard.
Sounds like Shaggy from Scooby Doo.
Yeah.
But then, while that's going on, we already knew from past issues that Nathaniel is in cahoots with the adult version of Franklin, who came back in time several issues ago now in Fantastic Four to tell the young Valeria about the future. And the adult Valeria from the same time period has come back to warn Sue about everything that's going to happen.
That was the infamous retard issue, isn't it?
Yes, but yeah. Yes, that was the one. That was the retard gate.
Yeah.
Spare them the details on that.
Yeah.
But essentially, they have been altering time in order to pave the way for some great thing that must happen in the future. But we don't know the details yet. And it's going to tie into this War of Three Cities thing. But we don't have all the details yet. And... but it's interesting as well because it goes. Have you read? You've read from the start of Hickman's run, have you?
I have. You talking about?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I think because I feels like it ties all the way back into that because Nathaniel returns to the future where. I'm just going to read this passage that Valeria says because I just love Hickman's command of language in this, and basically it's summed up by saying. After the last war, when all reality has collapsed into a single time stream and the heat death of everything is imminent, there is a white space where your son sits waiting for the new future we've created to overtake him. That gives me wee chills. I don't know why, but it just does. I love that. But basically, yeah, Franklin is waiting at an isolated spot in the future where he will act as an anchor for the changes that he has wrought upon the time stream. And Nathaniel is supposed to stay there with him, but Franklin casts him into the time stream because he's realized that by destroying all the other Nathaniel Richardses, every Reed Richards that's ever existed is an orphan. And Franklin says, it's what's wrong with him. It's what's wrong with all of them. And I think that this ties right back to the very start of Hickman's run, where every other Reed was willing to give up family. To join that collective of Reeds and our Reed, the one Reed who had the one dad didn't.
Hmm.
Mm.
So there's a long game in play here with Hickman's run, and Val returns to the future, and then they just get ready to face whatever is going to happen next. Well, not so much they're going to die, but. But yeah, it's kind of a setup issue, you know. It's not a set. I mean, there's a big fight spectacle at the start as well with Doom acting awesome, And it's setting the stage for 3, which begins next issue. And Steve Epting is going to be on the book too, so it might look halfway decent for a change. Actually, no, that's not fair. That's not fair.
The art in this issue is great.
No, it is actually pretty good in this one. Who did this? This is Neil Edwards. Now, I think this is the guy who did a bunch of earlier issues that were absolutely wretched, where nobody's facial that it was just Brian Hitch light, but he wasn't capable of pulling it off. It's a lot better than it was. But Steve Epting, bitches. So, yeah, I don't know. If you're not reading this by now, after all the amount of hooting and gushing I've done over it, I don't know if there's anything I can convince you. Just start reading 3. It's got Steve Epting drawing it, if nothing else. It's an awesome book. And, you should be reading this. And, read it.
I just have to get my hands on it. I want to read it.
It was such a good book. I really, really like this issue. I don't know. Just the whole. I really like the last 2 issues. Just the idea of, you know, his dad going back and recruiting a younger version of himself and a non-Thane Ben Grimm and a young Dr. Doom to go and help him fight, you know, an alternate reality version of himself is just geeky enough for me that it was just.
It is the high fantasy of Fantastic Four as well. Yeah. You know, it's the high. Sorry, somebody tweeted me. It's the it's that fantastic. It's the sort of story you're not going to find in many other books, but Fantastic Four.
It's the Fantastic Four that I wanted as a movie, you know, because you know, like as a movie, we kind of got kind of like a it wasn't really fantastic. It was really just yet another group of superheroes. You know what I mean? They didn't really go on a fantastic journey. They were just, you know, another group of heroes in like New York with funny powers. You know what I mean?
And they were the film emphasized on the family bits, and it didn't emphasize on the really sort of.
I mean, I wanted them to go to, like to the negative zone. I wanted like Reed Richards to take a vacation through time. You know,
to be fair, I mean, they weren't doing that in the very earliest issues of the comic, and I would say it's almost fair to say that even until. Until Mark Waid's run from a couple of years back, that wasn't even something that would have been included in a dictionary definition of the Fantastic Four. I mean, I'm pretty sure Mark Waid coined that Imaginauts tag that is perpetually attached to the Fantastic Four. But I mean, it has been something that has really defined the best Fantastic Four of my lifetime. And it is something the film didn't manage, but it is. I mean, this is the best Fantastic Four in my lifetime. And long may it continue, frankly.
Hope so.
Nice. I guess that's me then.
Oh, you sound so enthusiastic about it.
No. I was actually just poring over.
Come on, you had to have read something you liked.
I did actually. No. I'm about to go all awesome. So I'll start with issue 2 of Time Masters, Vanishing Point. So, Juergens. I mean, I like what Juergens is doing, which he's reminding us why Booster is such a damned interesting character. Some of that's what's happening over in Gen Lost, and it's definitely not what's happening over in Booster's own title. But there's an intro piece in this story where a young Rip Hunter is hanging out with his dad as they're protecting another piece of the time stream, which is the landing of Superman's rocket. And they just have a little discussion about, what they can do, and Rip is, you know, asked if they could go see Krypton, and Booster's like, well, sure, because we can go anywhere at any time, which of course leads into the storyline in which Rip is lost somewhere, sometime, and has no flipping clue where he is.
Okay, so is this issue based on that? Is this issue then? A little bit more of its own story compared to the first issue, which was this is what, you know, which was explaining Grant Morrison's madness.
Yeah, I mean, this was essentially, I think reading this issue, it made last issue seem like a better bridge. Because now that we've set up at least where the characters are, it's allowed for a little more interesting story, because now there's some extra elements. Like he teams up with this guy who apparently is a pre-existing character, something the Claw or something other, who was going to go kill the sorcerer and mistakes Rip for the sorcerer, and Rip's like, no, 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 but I'll help you. And they go off to this castle, which Skeets is with Rip, and Skeets tell him that the castle is surrounded by a stream of basically coronal energy, of an unknown and coronal energy. So that could be why they got thrown out of the time stream and thrown here, and so he's got to try to figure that out. In more bad news, a team of time-traveling villains has gotten together, and they're trying to steal information, or they know that Rip may be lost, so they're trying to do something, which consists of three villains at the height of their power, which is Despero, when he was supposedly his best, although it doesn't describe when that was, Degaton when he was a time-traveling Nazi, the Ultra-Humanit when he was fighting Infinity Inc., and the long-lost and fully powered Black Beetle. So, Black Beetle's been MIA since, like, back when they were still doing the Booster and Blue Beetle backups. He stole a Red Scarab and then, like, vanished and hasn't been seen since. And so now he's showed up, he's pulled these three other guys together, and they're basically going to try to defeat Rip. But they've ended up at the vanishing point, of which, of course, the vanishing point's been destroyed, so there's nothing there. And they're not sure why that's happening either. So, kind of trying to move on, though, but they make the point again, and it makes the point that the thing about Booster and the thing that makes Booster crazy is because Booster spends all of his time traveling around behind the scenes, nobody can really know what he's doing. And so he has this whole exchange with Hal, and Hal's like, you know, Booster, you're kind of a self-loving bastard. Why would Rip want you? And Booster's like, oh, you know, just said I'd help. And Hal's like, yeah, it's probably because you'll get, you know, a lot of sales and, you know, stuff out of it. He's like, yeah, yeah, that's it. And Hal's like, yeah, you're a dick. So, you know, scratch the fact that, you know, Booster has, you know, saved the time stream more times than anybody can count. He still is, you know, by his contemporaries, considered to be a self-promoting asshole. So, and that's, you know, and that's what's interesting about the character. But, I mean, and then, so the rest of the story is Rip finding a natural version of the vanishing point within this castle. They break into this castle, and then Supernova's here again. I mean, there's all these little elements that I'm liking, where it's like there's these little, just little questions, you know, that aren't big questions.
Have been drawn out of Jürgens's Booster run.
Yeah, and exactly, like things that are coming out of his run that you know now will get answered, because again, like Black Beetle's been gone forever. And I was really glad to see that character come back, because I didn't know if it was just forgotten about or what. So why are they
answering stuff like this in the mini and not in the monthly book? I mean, does that make sense?
Writers.
Well, yeah. I think that I don't know if they're trying to use this to, I mean, and again, this is more Rip's story than it is Booster's.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly this is supposed to be connecting into the search for Batman, although the only thing that tied to that really in this issue was you saw images of Batman from the past, you know, his travels through time within that time pool. But you know, right now it's more of these characters are lost in time and they're trying to figure out where they're at. And there's one character, this female character, that's a little bit strange because, I mean, again, they're in this, like, mythical sort of place and yet she has a laser pistol, so whatever. But anyway, that's good. I don't know that my only complaint, of course I have a complaint. My only complaint is that it's $3.99. And the only reason I can figure it's $3.99 is because it has the thicker, shiny cover. I don't know that I feel like I'm getting $3.99 worth of content out of the middle of the issue, but the cover is real shiny and nice.
That's good.
But I would appreciate if they would just go to like one of the regular covers and make it $2.99 and you know, just for my wallet's sake. On to more awesome. And apparently time travel is a big thing these days. Well, I guess there's no time travel in this, but Booster's in it, so you know, whatever. Which is Justice League Generation Lost, your new version of the Justice League International. As we left our heroes last time, they were being captured by Checkmate. And they had broke in disguised as Rockets Red and totally got busted because that's what happens. And they're still trying to find Max, but to no avail. So most of the issue is just them trying to find a way to get the hell out. And it's really great because they have Rockets Red, like, start, like, just talk. And so, like, part of it's just him, like, trying to babble his way and confuse them. And he's like, you Westerners and you capitalist bastards, you don't respect communism at all. And they're like, the Chinese delegation's on the second floor. I don't know what are you saying? Like, you hate the workers. You hate those who would, no, it's, we're international. It's really, you are so evil. It's just keep going on. Anyway, but they end up they're on their way out, and there's a bit of a teaser for which may start to be more of a storyline in which, of course, they're getting shot at, but their suits are bulletproof, so they figure that they could just run, which takes them a minute to figure out. But they end up shooting Rockets Red with this, like, or putting on this, like, neuralizing clamp on him, and it nearly kills him, which draws the ire of one Fire, who, unthinking, because the whole deal is they're trying to protect their identities, which is why they're all dressed up as Rockets Red, and she ends up, you know, activating her Fire ability to get it off of him and totally blows her cover. So most of the team blows their cover as well, and Captain Atom fights him, you know, breaks through the wall, and everybody escapes, and the Black King is going to go after them, but the White King is like, you know, we're really not that well politically set right now, and our organization's kind of in flux, and we might lose funding, so let's just try to pretend this didn't happen. Like, no,
wow, harm. That sounds like Justice League International. Let's just kind of pretend this didn't happen.
Yeah. But the team makes it out, but Gravel's pretty well heard, and Ice, you can tell, I mean, there's a little bit of dialogue with Ice, and you can tell that this whole deal is really wearing on her. You know, I mean, it's almost like she's losing focus. She can't go home because they're fugitives. They can't find Max. They're not getting anywhere. They're having to hide. She's not dealing with all of this very well. But on the other side of it, there's some really, you know, nice dialogue between Rockets Red and Fire. It looks like they may be going for a little bit of a love interest between those two characters. I think especially after he, you know, really took a bullet for him, I think that impressed her. And so she goes to leave, and Booster tries to talk to her about how she's doing, and she's, you know, you know, basically said, I'll talk to you about it when I'm ready. And she goes into one of the workrooms in the air. I think they're in the old JLI headquarters. And she goes into a room to go pull out a computer or some medical equipment or something. And you hear a voice off panel that says, sounds like Booster wanted to have a heart-to-heart. So do I. And it's Max.
Dun, dun, dun. Bum,
bum, bum.
Bum, yes. So all that time that they spent breaking into Checkmate and then breaking out, and Max was just hanging out in old JLI headquarters waiting on him. Brilliant! So, we'll see where that goes, because, hey, you just wait 2 weeks and more comes out. So I'm complaining about a $4 once a month issue, and yet I'm gladly dropping $6 plus dollars a month on Justice League.
Yeah, you get twice the content.
But, you know, exactly. You get more stuff. So, anyway, love both of those. I think Gen Loss is really picking up. I'm certainly enjoying it more than Booster, so, which isn't saying much.
Yeah, I'm disappointed, but we said that last week.
Yeah, I know. Didn't
we? Yeah, we did, yeah.
It's worth saying again. So, there I was in my shop. And like I said, I've been doing really well. I'm buying all of my comics, going to my shop and doing that. And they're really cool guys. I mean, the shop's been there a long time. The guy that owns the shop is like my age, you know, maybe even younger. I mean, he's, you know, and he's been running on his own for a while, but knows his stuff. I mean, the guy is sharp. And there's another couple of guys that run it. Anyway, so there I am, and I'm putting two issues on the desk. I've got my Justice League, and I've got my Time Masters, and I'm like, I really should buy something else. I have the budget for it. And I'm like, you know what would be interesting discussion topic is going to be Avengers. But
I thought you said you weren't going to buy Avengers anymore.
I did say that. Yeah, and that was my thought. I said, I'm not going to buy Avengers. I've heard it's terrible. You know, and it's been bad. I'm like, why would I do that? I'm like, well, okay. You know, it's just like your barkeep. You trust your barkeep. So I went up to the counter and I said, would I hate myself if I bought Avengers 4? And both of these guys look me square in the face, go, oh no, it's great. It's an excellent issue. Really? Oh yeah, they fight Ultron. And I'm like, okay. And I buy it. Yeah. So well, Avengers 4.
Some Avengers fight Ultron in it.
It wasn't a lot.
Ultron's certainly there.
Oh, yeah. So here we are at Avengers 4. Someone take this away from me so I don't cry.
Okay, well, I'll be honest. I didn't think this was that bad.
Yeah, I didn't hate it. It was a lot better than last issue.
It was better than last issue. I don't want to say, like, I don't want to, like, preempt myself and say that this was bad. It certainly was not the level of awesome it was sold to me as. But please continue.
I think the thing about this issue is this should have been issue 2.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because issue 3 was an utter waste of time. Absolute. It was nothing but stretching the story out for no reason. And issue 2, well, half of it was them getting ready to make the time travel, which is fair enough as a narrative point, even though they should have just been knocking on the Baxter Building's door and been on their way in the first two pages. But the second half with Wonder Man attacking was baffling, not even pointless. Baffling.
Yeah.
He attacked and flew off. You know, what the hell was that? You know. But this is the one where one team of Avengers travels forward into the future and faces the threat that's happening there, while one team of Avengers stays in the present and deals with the threats to the present that are being caused by the broken time stream. A very logical, straightforward, unexpected, unenjoyable part of a story like this, which should have just been the second part.
Yeah.
Also, Devil Dinosaur exploded. Mother of God, no why.
What happened?
It was so random.
No!
It was so random.
I mean, they pretty much, like that last issue ending with that. It's like, hey, it's Devil Dinosaur. I expected Devil Dinosaur to be running through the streets or something and bashing machines or something. And then I turned the page and I don't even know what happened. I see an explosion and then I see Spider-Man about to vomit because he has something on his head.
The Martians killed Devil Dinosaur.
So random.
That's what you get with broken time. I also really enjoy, you know, I've never read any Kill Raven, but I just love the fact that Spider-Man remembers that one time he met him in some 1980s issue of Marvel Team-Up.
Yeah.
Possibly it was like, 1970s.
It was years for him, but it was like, what, like minutes?
Yeah, just like a week for Kill Raven.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Remembering little weird, obscure things like that. And, you know, some really nice, like, big splashes from Romita as well. There are two just particularly really nice double-page splashes in this one.
Well, just
Ultron fighting all the heroes, and then there's Galactus. Well, just the city overrun by things from throughout time. And, of course, one of those things is Galactus.
Yeah.
And then everything goes, it's like, There's a lot of crafty little bait and switches as well. We've got Captain America, Iron Man, and Wolverine in the future, and they get attacked by the... I'm going to call them the Young Avengers. That's not what they are. You know, the Avengers children. And we're like, oh, crap, because they're bad, and that's not good.
But then they bring the cartoon? Is it the Next Avengers? Is that what the cartoon was called?
Next Avengers was the title of the film, so that'll do for a name.
I know. It's just like, well, we'll call them the Young Avengers. No, that won't work. We'll call them the New Avengers. Crap!
The Teen Avengers.
We're all adventured out.
But then they wake up in front of the Hulk, and the Hulk's all like, get over here, you old son of a gun! And everyone's all happy and friendly. And then it's like, hey, look, turned out it was old Tony Stark from the future that had this all happen. But it turns out he's evil too! Or is he? Also, one of my customers is totally in that I Am an Avenger collage that's on the second last page of this issue.
No way, really?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 across. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 down.
Now, how did you get into that? How did that thing work?
I believe you just took your picture and sent it in.
Is it like through Twitter or something? Or you just sent it to Marvel's website or email?
Dead.
Well, I should have done that.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, I don't know that there's an awful lot to actually say about this. Because it's just the logical forward progression of the story with some nice art, nostalgia-pleasing references, and amusing moments of dialogue. It's a perfectly solid comic. It's just a bit late after two completely pointless issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because they spent all that time trying to explain, like, the time travel thing. And like you said, it's like, why
didn't
freaking
Marvel universe? Yeah, first of all, don't even get me bloody started on how Bendis completely misunderstands how time travel and the mechanics of time work in the Marvel universe. I'm sorry, my nerd hat is on. But you can't change history in the Marvel universe. Changing time only results in creating a branching timeline. Time does not work this way. Alan Heinberg did this even at Young Avengers, a good book, but he did it with the first storyline in Young Avengers as well, where the present began changing. Time travel does not work that way in the Marvel Universe. Mark Gruenwald said so, and he's dead, and you can't go against the dead.
Yeah. Because they can't argue with you.
That is handbook stuff that, you know, time travel doesn't work the way that this story is presenting it to. Well, no, actually, to be fair, this is just time is broken and things. This isn't too bad, but time can't be changed. Time could probably be shattered, but you can't change time. So it's a little. I don't think Bendis is approaching it with the correct head, but it doesn't seem to actually be too important for the mechanics of the story just yet, but it's always just there teetering on the edge of my brain, getting ready to annoy me if it goes wrong.
Part of it, I think, is it was oversold to me, you know?
Yes, that does seem like it was a little bit, you know.
But there's just the random elements, like exploding dinosaur for no reason. I mean, it's like you didn't even hear a missile coming
don't
in.
Put devil dinosaur in a story just to explode him.
Yeah. You know, devil dinosaur is
awesome. I remember when devil dinosaur fought Godzilla.
Yeah. So it's like that. And here's the other thing. I mean, I guess I just have to accept it for the story reason. But it's like, I'm sorry, you don't beat the crap out of Wolverine and make him unconscious. I don't care what year you're from. You know what I mean? Like, you bind him or you drug him or something. But just the fact that, like, they hit him with the shield and then kick him in the head, and it's like, oh, that was easy because he's from 100 years ago. Hello? The guy is already from 100 years ago.
Unless that guy's wearing an adamantium toe-capped boot.
Yeah.
Kicking Wolverine in the head is not going to end well for him.
No, exactly. So I was like, really? Okay. So
yeah, that sequence is a little suspect.
But anyway,
Iron Man has shields over his eyes.
Yes, it doesn't just go
to fly in there. Iron Man has protective guards over his eyes.
Yeah, that doesn't just go straight in. In fact, he's said several times that the suit doesn't even need to have the frickin' eye holes. That he could actually take those out. So. It's just kind of weird.
So are you getting about issue 5 is the
hell
question.
No.
But we'll say
boring bullshit.
So like watch issue 5 come out and it'll be like awesome and we'll be telling you about it and you'll be like, man, I wish I had a ball issue 5.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't see that happening. I don't know. Although we'll be sitting here in another month and I'll be like, this is amazing!
I tell you what, though. This is still a little bit more coherent and forward-moving and revealing little pieces of its story and mystery than Secret Avengers was.
Yeah.
I have to say, upon some more reflection after last week, I'm feeling more and more let down by that alleged part 4 of 4 that Secret Avengers served us up. At least this is actually progressively revealing pieces of its mystery in a method that makes sense and builds suspense instead of cowboys.
Yeah. I've got to maybe once Slott completely takes over Spider-Man, I'll start reading Spider-Man.
I really should do that.
Do it.
I think I will, because I really feel bad that I'm not giving money to Marvel, but they haven't been doing things that warrant my money. So, or maybe Thor. Maybe I could get into Thor, too.
Get into Thor.
See, because I actually know a lot of that Norse mythology, so if it's going to be more mythology-based, then... You know, that actually interests me.
It's hard to say what approach Fraction will take with it, but Gillen has just been doing something very mythological with it.
Yeah.
As long as I get frost giants, I'll be happy.
There you go.
They turn up eventually, one way or the other.
All right. Well, there you go. That's our show this week.
I found a little bit of news while we were talking there.
Ooh, okay, we'll take it.
It's not much. Boom Studios to produce Rescue Rangers comic.
So this has been our show for this week. And
hey, if it can be as good as their Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
that sounds like somebody who's not reading Darkwing Duck.
I'm not, but that's not been intentionally. I know.
It's hard to find. I can't find it
anywhere.
It
actually has been hard to find. I need to just put it in my poll.
I can't find it. I can't get it. I have to resort to spurious means. There's no way for me to get it.
Rescue Rangers just not, I don't know.
No, I kind of agree. Rangers. I revisited some of that stuff a while back there, but Rescue Rangers is definitely much further down the quality ladder than DuckTales or Gummy Bears, or
if you would have said Gizmo Duck, I would have been there.
Dude, Gummy Bears. I think I would buy that.
Gummy Bears was awesome. It's a conclusion I reached a year or two back when I imported the first DVD set, and I imported some DuckTales soon after, and I came to the shocking realization that Gummy Bears was better than DuckTales.
Really? You think so?
I have a great love for Gummy Bears, but as just like me as an adult
person slash man child. I got so much more enjoyment out of Gummy Bears, which was much better animation than DuckTales managed overall as well, I think.
Yeah, Gummy Bears has some people should sweet go animation. And
Gummy Bears, you might be surprised at just how enjoyable it is and how what a surprising little sense of continuity it has as well.
It makes you miss like older Disney cartoons. Like anything that Disney puts out now is just kind of bleh.
I don't remember what was the last thing Disney brought out.
They were putting some stuff out a couple of years ago on like Team Disney, but it wasn't good. It was not good at all.
Well, Darkwing Duck also, though, I revisited some of that, you know, and it is great. And, you know, if you want Gizmo Duck, Darkwing Duck number 4 might be the place to look.
Ooh.
It's curious. Okay, well, I mean, I'll just speak briefly about issue 3. In issue 3, we learn the identity of the mysterious villain behind the Quackworks organization. It's not Negaduck. But he has Honker Muddlefoot, Gosselin's friend, strapped in a chair.
It's not the bull guy, is it?
Sorry?
Well, it's not the bull guy, is it? What was the bull? Bull?
That would be telling.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
I've read it because you will read it. I will feed to it.
I need to.
Yeah, but he's got Honker like strapped down in a marathon man-style chair. And there's a crate in front of him, like a large metal crate, padlock marked top secret. And he says, "You must only say one thing. And that one thing is this." And a word appears on the screen, and Honker just reads in it. It's some overly complicated word. And nothing happens. "This." And another word appears, and another word appears, and another word appears. And he says, "I thought you said I only had to say one thing. And that thing is the whole English language." And it seems very like that crate has the Gizmo Duck armor in it, and he's trying to find the code word.
Yeah, the activation word. Mm. Yeah. It's going to take him a hell of a long time to get to Blathering Blatherskite.
Blatherskite. Yes, mama.
God.
I need to watch some DuckTales.
You need to
just go. I just want to watch like Darkwing Duck, and then pull out the DuckTales episode,
the team up episode, or something.
Oh God! There's nothing better though than just the pure love of watching Gizmo Duck and Darkwing Duck together, because it's almost like Batman.
I don't know if we've talked about it before. If you guys know, but Darkwing's actually been upgraded to an ongoing series at Boom.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about that. That's awesome.
I couldn't remember. Well, it's happened, and like we've seen the covers for the next couple of issues after the mini, and it seems like some kind of Crisis on Infinite Darkwings thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because I can't remember what the plot of the episode was, but there was an episode that was like Dark Warrior Duck, which was like some kind of grim and gritty 90s version of Darkwing. But I don't remember if that was something somebody made up, or if Darkwing tried to reinvent his image, or what it was. But anyway, he's in it. And some various other alternate Darkwings as well.
All right, well, I'm going to go get all of that and make sure I'm caught back up.
This is quality stuff.
So, very good. Okay, well, that's it. That's our show. Please go to tfradio.net. That is the website with all of the shows that we have. I'll put out a little teaser out there that Brian and I might be starting a new show of our own. So keep an eye out for that. Anyway, that's it. Thank you so much for joining us, and please tune in next week when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.